This podcast is intended for investment professionals only. All investing involves risk.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of L&G Talks Asset Management. I'm Max Julius, Head of Content, and I'm delighted to be joined by Joe McCaffrey, our Chief Strategy and Product Officer, and Brad Marshall, Global Head of Private Credit Strategies at Blackstone, the world's largest alternative asset manager. Hi, both. Great to have you on the pod.
Hi, Max. Great to be here.
Hi, Max.
Well, today we're going to discuss the new partnership between our two organizations, offer an overview of private credit, and look at the role the asset class might play alongside public credit within investor portfolios. So with no further ado, Joe, why are L&G and Blackstone partnering?
Thanks, Max. And great to be here and great to spend time with all of our regular listeners to the pod. It's a tremendously exciting time for us here at L&G and hopefully for our colleagues in Blackstone, as you'll hear shortly, as we announced our new strategic partnership in the summer. It was really a coming together of two great firms, and we were thrilled to be able to partner with Blackstone. Really, what we wanted to do when we were thinking about this partnership was to be able to combine the skill and scale of our active fixed income teams in public markets with the skill and scale of Blackstone's private markets team in credit. And there were a couple of reasons for that. One is, obviously, as an insurance-based firm, we deeply understand the increased appetite across lots of different types of clients for credit strategies that move beyond just the public or just the private, and the ability to be able to combine those together with two great investment teams was an opportunity too good to pass up. We also really wanted to be able to partner with somebody that could take advantage of our strength in the UK, and in particular, to be able to think about the wholesale market. We've done brilliant work as an industry at creating products for institutions in credit. Blackstone has really led the way in creating opportunities for high-end wealth investors to be able to access private markets. But a huge untapped potential in the industry is to be able to offer smaller clients access to good quality, well-structured products that give them access to some of these important private markets opportunities. And thus far, that's been really a tough nut to crack. And we couldn't think of a better partner to be able to do that with than Blackstone.
Okay, thanks, Joe. My takeaway there is the partnership is an opportunity too good to miss for this tough nut to crack. Brad, anything to add there?
We agree. The partnership is incredibly well aligned. And it's, if you think about just the growth in the opportunity set in private credit, it's only expanding. So the timing of the partnership couldn't be better, in my view. And as I think about the investor opportunity at this point to add this type of asset class to their overall portfolio, we think it's very exciting and will lead to more growth over time.
Thanks, Brad. Let's stay with you and on that theme about the asset class. You will, of course, be deeply aware that private credit has expanded at a record pace and is now a central plank of lending markets. And yet to many investors, it's still somewhat unknown. So let's go back to basics. What is private credit?
Yeah, perfect. Great question, because I think the term gets thrown around a lot. But very simply, when a company is looking for capital, for debt capital, and it's a large company, they have two paths to choose. One, they can reach out to a bank to source that capital. The bank will do some underwriting, they will underwrite that debt, and then they will distribute that debt to the public markets. Option two is they can reach out to someone like a Blackstone directly and look for that capital in a more customized, you know, path. And that's the part of the market that has been growing the quickest. When I started about 20 years ago in private credit, the private markets made up about 5% of the overall private credit markets. It was really the domain of smaller companies that couldn't access bank capital. Fast forward to today, that market is about 35%. So the pie's grown and the proportion of deals getting done privately has expanded meaningfully. And there's lots of reasons why, which maybe we'll talk about a little bit later. But the biggest kind of growth engine in terms of where private credit has expanded into is at the larger end of the corporate spectrum. So bigger companies looking for private solutions away from the banks. And that's lined up really well with investors who have allocated more capital to the asset class.
Well, that's a great overview. And yes, let's drill down a bit into some of the reasons behind that growth you just mentioned there, Brad. So a follow-up question for you is, why would a company be willing to pay a bit more to lenders in a private credit financing instead of through a bank or through the public capital markets?
Well, I wish I could say it's our charming personality, but there's more depth behind it. So if you take a step back and look at the process that a company has to go through to access, you know, bank-led capital, the bank has to commit its balance sheet, it has to go out and get a rating, it then has to distribute that debt to hundreds of investors. And there's an infrastructure expense that is involved in that process. And because of that, they charge the company about 300 basis points of fees and expenses to serve in that capacity. When they go direct to someone like a Blackstone, that 300 basis points we effectively take and pass on to our investors. So the company is maybe paying a little bit more, but when you factor in the expenses that we are saving because the company is going directly to us, it's actually not that much more expensive. So that's kind of point number one, and really important for investors to understand. This farm to table, this direct model creates a lot of efficiencies. Those efficiencies accrue to the benefit of investors. The second point is around customization. So when we work with a company, we are sitting across the table from them, listening to their needs and coming up with a capital solution that is very unique to them. That's very different than when they access the public markets, which needs to fit and conform to a box. So because of that customization, and that could be anything from giving them a more simplified capital structure, that could be giving them an acquisition line of capital so they can go do additional roll-ups into their company. All these points of customization are an advantage for private credit because at the end of the day, we're not constrained by anything but risk. So it's our primary consideration when we're underwriting a deal is what is the risk of the credit. All these other features we can add on to, and that's a unique advantage to private credit. And because of that, we charge a little bit of a premium for our investors in providing, you know, those types of solutions. And if I was to give you an example, we financed a company this year and last year, a company called Dropbox, which is a large public company, $8-9 billion of market cap. And we gave them a $2 billion capital solution. They could easily access a bank-led public deal, but they chose to work with us because we gave them certain flexibility that they were willing to pay up for and work privately with someone like a Blackstone, which leads into my third point, which is why would a company pay a little bit of a premium? And with us specifically, we offer a partnership to these companies. We're lending our brand, our partnership, our capital base, which can grow with them over time. We have a value creation team, which actually helps create real, tangible, either revenue or cost savings that drive enterprise value creation for these companies because we're part of this massive, you know, platform at Blackstone, and they get to take advantage of our ecosystem. So those would be the three points: efficiency, customization, and partnership.
It's a great example you used there, and thank you for walking us through those dynamics, particularly the farm-to-table point there. Joe, given this important context, about private credit. What are the key investor considerations around the asset class?
Well, it very much depends on who you are as an investor. So for investors into private credit, some questions and considerations remain true, whoever you are. So the quality of the team arranging the credit, how big is the team? What's their track record? How do they manage risk? What's their underwriting process? How much experience do they have in your sector or in your type of business as a lender? And as an investor, you're looking for that to be deep expertise from the private credit manager, and you're looking for people who have scale and expertise across multiple market cycles. You want them to have seen stuff and managed through it. The other thing that's always important across all client types and all investor types is what role you want the private credit to play in your existing portfolio. What will it be sitting alongside, or what is it replacing? And it's really important that all investors really understand that and understand exactly what role it wants to play. But that begins to vary depending on the type of client. And the third thing, of course, is value for money. Is it being a good workhorse in the portfolio, and are you getting the types of returns and the volume of return that you would expect for the risk that you're taking in your allocation? So those are the things that we would expect all clients to care about. Then depending on what type of client you are, the other things you might consider are quite different. For institutions who have been buying private credit as an allocation for a long time, they'll have very specific questions around exactly what strategy or what sector they're buying. Do they need specific structuring in the debt or in the way that you access the debt, whether it's a fund or another type of vehicle like a note? And of course, most loans are long duration in nature, so they might be 4 or 5 years. So as an institution, typically you're expecting to lock up your capital and harvest that illiquidity premium. Now, the interesting thing is that as we've seen more private credit allocations from wealth over time, and now hopefully increasingly wholesale clients, the key thing really to consider, aside from all these things we've already talked about, is access. How do you actually get access to its class in a way that is suitable for you as an investor, generates good value for money, but also fits in the reality of the platform that you're trying to operate within? Now, the infrastructure that our clients operate in varies by market and varies by region. But when you're thinking about this allocation, it's all very well to want to be able to access the underlying asset class. But if you can't do it in a way that is easy for your back office to manage and easy for you to be able to report on to your underlying clients, it becomes a bit of a fool's errand. So we see very important asset class considerations that are shared by all investors, and then some divergence between institutions and wealth and wholesale.
And to what extent, Joe, is liquidity also a key consideration for certain investor types?
It's a huge consideration because, as we talked about, one of the beauties of private credit as an asset class is that it tends to be long duration in nature. And so if we think about our sort of investment 101, one of the premiums that you can access as an investor is the illiquidity premium. So you get paid more when you're willing to lock up your capital for longer as a way of being able to realize value. That works if you're able and willing to lock your capital. But if, for example, you're a wealth advisor and either your underlying clients don't want you to lock it, or you're, from a regulatory perspective, not allowed to lock it for that long, liquidity is going to be an absolutely critical thing. And this is really what's driving the adoption of more and more products that are blending public and private, where investors are increasingly able to access product and investment strategies that blend the long duration private credit assets with public credit that's able to generate that liquidity that you might need as a client.
Thank you. And on that exact point, then, taking a step back from looking at the asset class in isolation, why indeed might investors seek to combine both public and private credit within a portfolio?
So I'll let Brad talk a little bit about the investment case for it. But certainly from an access perspective, as we look at this, the increased convergence between public and private credit, it's becoming increasingly obvious that investors are no longer bifurcating their portfolios and their asset allocations in the same way. Historically, there has been a very hard line between the part of the portfolio that is private and the part of the portfolio that is public, and never the two shall meet. Increasingly now, we see it most clearly in credit. We begin to see the blending, and we see that both in the types of credit that are being allocated to. So we'll have seen and read articles about the growth of the CLO market and CLO ETFs being increasingly issued and bought by clients, the growth of the syndicated loan market, both on the public and the private side, and increasingly asset-backed finance, where we begin to see the bridge between public and private credit becoming clearer. So from an investor perspective, we're seeing that behavior and those allocations happen in the portfolios. As Brad talked about, from an issuance perspective, for the underlying companies, having flexibility to be able to choose public or private, are you going to prioritize the flexibility and the customized nature of the covenants and structures you might get in a private deal versus a straightforward issuance of public debt? That flexibility is important to some issuers. And for investors, the ability to be able to balance private credit within a portfolio with the liquidity and yield that you'll get from public is increasingly a really interesting thing for them. So you have this sort of convergence happening both in the underlying asset class and in investor behavior, where they're beginning to think, why am I so segmented in my allocation? How can I bring this together to access 360 degrees of credit?
That's a really interesting point about the blurring of lines there. And I like your kind of subtle Romeo and Juliet allusion there too. Brad, does this align to your thinking about public and private?
Yeah. I mean, we've seen this trend happening with endowments and institutions for a while. In fact, we've seen probably an increase in the number of multi-asset kind of credit portfolios that we're asked to create for our institutional investors. Remember, we're a big in the private side, but we also have a very big public business. So we actually see the entire world of credit as we can allocate dynamically between different asset classes and credit. More and more investors are looking for that flexibility and that exposure. On the individual front, what used to be a 60-40 stocks and bonds portfolio construction forever, that I think has proven to be a model that doesn't work as well anymore because of the correlation between how the two asset classes have performed. And that has led investors to look more openly to more private kind of assets. So that is kind of what started the movement in looking for ways to drive more income. In the US, it started maybe 5 years ago when interest rates were zero and fixed income, 90% of the fixed income market was generating less than 2% yield. That doesn't work for a lot of people and their needs long-term. And so, people started to look beyond and take a more institutional approach to their portfolio construction. At the same time, to Joe's point, there is a liquidity premium that you get when you're looking at private assets. And so they're willing to allocate a portion of their portfolio to an asset class that should generate a higher return over time. So I think all those realizations happened. At the same time, there's been product innovation. And I think that's what's accelerated the adoption with financial advisors, with individuals into products like private credit. These vehicles are making it easier for them to access and more broadly available, and that works, especially with an asset class that has a 20-year history of performing incredibly well versus fixed income assets. So that's really compelling if you're taking a long-term view on portfolio construction.
Well, thanks very much, Brad, for that long-term perspective there and laying out the macro story behind the asset class too. Joe, as we prepare to launch a public-private credit strategy next year, what's front of mind in terms of meeting our clients' needs?
So as you would expect, we are very client-led when we're thinking about product development, particularly product development, where we're trying to do new things and to introduce things to a market that has traditionally not had access to that asset class. And in talking to clients already in the UK, we're going to start in the UK because that's our home base. But in talking to clients in the UK particularly, they've raised three really important things. One is they want it to be really diversified. They already have a lot of UK exposure, as many investors do in their home market, but they really think that this opportunity needs to be a globally diversified exposure. And they want it to really fit as part of the core credit allocation in their portfolios. The second thing is the reality of the UK's infrastructure. So clients have been absolutely crystal clear with us that this has to be able to fit with the reality of how our platforms and our infrastructure works as a fund ecosystem. Now, the really interesting thing about the UK at the moment is that as an industry, we're on the move. And we see tremendous movement from government policy, the IA, the Investment Association, industry groups, the Treasury. We see tremendous focus across all of the participants in the ecosystem to say we need to better connect the top level policy of wanting investors to be able to get access to longer term assets, to diversify their portfolio, to be able to really contribute to a productive economy. We need to connect that policy goal better with the tools and fund wrappers that we have available to us and the underlying infrastructure that fund buyers and sellers use in the UK. And at the moment, absolutely, admittedly, there is a mismatch there, and the industry is having to work really hard to address that. Now, we are, as you would imagine, as the UK's largest asset manager, right at the forefront of that conversation and really pushing as hard as we can on behalf of our clients. But clients have been absolutely clear with us that they need our support in helping to think about that infrastructure. The third thing they've told us is that this needs to be liquid enough for their underlying clients, and it needs to be clear and honest about the liquidity. We cannot create magical liquidity from nowhere. These are, on the private side, long-term obligations. And therefore, we need to be really clear in our disclosure and explain to people in a clear and educational way exactly what's within their portfolio so that they can then explain it to their underlying clients. As you would imagine, as we begin to think about good quality product development, where we're developing the market and offering something new, we're trying to develop and be innovative while deeply listening to investors and the challenges they're offering us to say, yes, we agree we want access to this underlying asset class, but it has to be in a way that works for our underlying portfolios and clients.
Yeah, that's really clear about the importance of listening to our market and the role of education and in addressing that mismatch between investor aspirations and needs and the market or industry infrastructure. Well, Brad, one final question to you, which is, in light of recent headlines about the broader private credit market, how do you approach underwriting both new and existing investments to mitigate risk?
Yeah, I think you're referring to the articles on First Brands and Tricolor, which may be old news by the time this airs, but you know, those were actually great examples of why we love private credit. They were bank underwritten, bank structured, and bank distributed investments to the public markets, had nothing to do with private credit. And ironically, those are actually perfect examples of what we love about our process, to your question around private credit. We're making long-term investments in companies. Our terms are usually last about, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. So we have to have this long-term point of view. We have to have this long-term partnership with the company and the owners of the business. And because of that, the diligence process is not a 2-week flyby assessment. And while we're doing that at an individual company level, we're also taking a very thematic approach to where we want to deploy our investors' capital. So we're looking at trends in the market. By the way, we're invested, to give you some reference point, in 5,000 companies. And so with that scale, we have a lot of data. We have a lot of viewpoints on the direction of travel. We can therefore allocate our focus and our attention to sectors that we think have good tailwinds, sectors that we think are don't have kind of regulatory or single points of failure. And that's where we use, as Joe mentioned at the start, our deep expertise in investing in these thematic areas. And more specifically, those will be sectors that have high cash flow conversion, so less capital intensive businesses. These will be businesses with more reoccurring revenue type profiles, are not dependent on massive growth for them to be profitable. It doesn't mean the defaults won't happen. So there will be more articles, more headlines. And that's really kind of, I think, our superpower when it comes to generating returns for our investors, because we are at the top of the capital structure. When a company defaults, all that means is the previous equity owner gives the debt holders ownership of the company. So it doesn't mean it's the end. In some cases, it's actually the beginning. And Blackstone as a company is very well suited to own and operate a business. It's not what we strive for in our credit business, but it does happen for a variety of reasons. And then we're in a position to do what we can with the business to hopefully grow it. And to put a finer point on that, over 20 years, we've had a handful of defaults, but our loss rate is almost zero, which just means we've had some companies that have lost a bit of money, but we've had companies that we've made money from our position in the capital structure. So it's a very defensive asset class, and because of where we sit in the capital structure, but also within Blackstone, we have the resources to make sure that we take a very kind of defensive, long-term approach. Long-winded answer to your question, but I think I don't want to scare people away that there'll never be another headline.
Well, thanks, Brad. I'd say it was actually a wide-ranging answer, a great insight into your approach.
And again, just to overly simplify it, all we're doing is disintermediating the banks. We are lending money directly to companies that would have otherwise accessed capital in the public markets. We're passing those efficiencies onto investors. We're getting a premium because of the customization. And then we have a more control over the preservation of capital when things may go sideways with the company.
Thanks, Brad. Well, we covered a huge amount of ground today. Is there anything you'd each like to add before we wrap up? Joe?
Nothing for me. Thanks, Max. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you. And Brad?
Yeah, I just think there's a great partnership that we have with LNG. We're very, very excited about bringing this asset class to you all, and we're excited about the journey ahead. An asset class that has a very, very long history of performing well for our investors.
Well, that's a lovely point on which to end this episode. This has been a really informative and insight-packed conversation. Thanks both very much for your time today. And thank you to our clients and listeners for joining us. If you'd like to learn more about private credit, I direct you to the Blackstone University website, where you'll find excellent educational material. From an LNG perspective, you can find our regular updates on our LinkedIn channel, on our blog, and of course here on LNG Talks Asset Management.
As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals only and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. The views expressed in this podcast are those of LNG's Asset Management Division as at the date of publication. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and we're not soliciting any action based on it. The information discusses general market, economic or political issues, or industry or sector trends. It does not constitute research or investment, legal or tax advice. It is not recommendation or advertisement to buy or sell securities or pursue a particular investment strategy. energy. Assumptions, opinions, and estimates are provided for illustrative purposes only. There is no guarantee that any forecast made will come to pass. No party shall have any right of action against LNG in relation to the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Where this podcast contains third-party information, the accuracy or completeness of such information cannot be guaranteed, and we accept no responsibility or liability in respect of such information, not for distribution to any person in any jurisdiction where such distribution would be contrary to local law or regulations. Copyright 2025. Legal and General Investment Management Limited is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. Unless otherwise stated, references herein to LNG, we and us are meant to capture the global conglomerate that includes, in the European Economic Area, LGIM Managers Europe Limited, authorised and regulated by the Central Bank of Ireland as a UCITS management company pursuant to European Communities Undertaking for Collective Investment in Transferable Securities Regulations 2011 as amended, and as an Alternative Investment Fund Manager pursuant to the European Union Alternative Investment Fund Managers Regulations 2013 as amended. In the USA, Legal and General Investment Management America, Inc., a US SEC regulated investment advisor. In Japan, Legal and General Investment Management Japan, KK, a Japan FSA registered investment management company. In Hong Kong, issued by Legal and General Investment Management Asia Limited, which is licensed by the Securities and Futures Commission. And in Singapore, issued by LGIM Singapore Pte Limited, company registration number 20223187 6W, which is regulated by the Monetary Authority of Singapore. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. To find more content, you can check us out on LinkedIn or on our website.